curated to encourage leaders at all levels to be their best selves and to bring a fresh, curious perspective to today's issues in business and culture. Our goal is to equip listeners with the resources to always move forward.
Hey, welcome to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I'm Ron Kitchens. I am so excited today. You know, one of the great things about doing a podcast and leadership conferences is you get to meet your heroes and you get to hang out with them, whether it's over the podcast, the phone, or it's in person. And in this case, it's both. And so we've got a podcast today with Vivian Howard. If you don't know Vivian, her James Beard Award-winning show, Chef's Life, she has a great cookbook out that's won just about every award you can win in that genre. But she is also somebody that probably doesn't realize that she's a community and economic developer. She left a successful career in New York City to come home to North Carolina to not only build a restaurant and a life, but reinvigorate her community. And it just shows you that kind of Margaret Mead quote that never doubt that a group of thoughtfully committed individuals can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. Vivian Howard proves that's true. I hope you'll enjoy listening to this as much as I did recording it. And I hope if you do, come join us at Catalyst University, June 20th, Kalamazoo, Michigan, where you'll see Vivian firsthand. If you'll mention this, if you buy a ticket and you'll mention this, the first three people to mention it, I'll make sure you get to meet Vivian. We'll do a backstage or something. We'll get you a picture with her if you're a big fan, as big a fan as I am. So enjoy the interview. Hey, Vivian, I'm so excited that you're going to be with us for Catalyst University in June. For the few of our listeners who aren't familiar with you yet, and it's going to be a few because I've been talking about how excited I am that you're coming, give us kind of the Cliff Notes version of who you are and how that you got to where you are today.
Okay, sure. If my Cliff Notes get too long, you just let me know. I grew up in Eastern North Carolina in a little farming community called Deep Run. And my parents were tobacco farmers. And I just always remember wanting to leave. It's one of my first memories. I did not want to live in the country. I wanted to be able to order Chinese food and have a Chinese person bring it to my doorstep. And I wanted to unwrap it and break out chopsticks like a city person. And so I always wanted to leave. I went to boarding school when I was 14, went to college in Raleigh, North Carolina, and then after college, moved to New York with hopes of being a journalist. And I worked in advertising for a while, did not get a job in journalism. And then I quit after 9/11 because a lot of the people I knew were making career changes just around the idea that you could go to work and then never come home. So you might as well go to work doing something you love. So I quit my job and decided I would pursue this career in writing. But I had experience all through college as a server in restaurants. So I got a job as a server in a restaurant. And that restaurant actually ended up just by, I guess, destiny's power being the concept of the restaurant was Southern food via Africa. And the chef was a really wonderful storyteller. So I decided that I would continue being a server there, but I would also start working in the kitchen before my shift on the floor at night. And I worked in the kitchen in an effort to hopefully turn that experience into a career as a food writer. But what happened was I just kept writing, I mean, kept cooking and not writing at all. And I found that I loved like the camaraderie of the kitchen and the, you know, the momentum and pressure that is related to working in a kitchen. And I loved making things. So at that restaurant, I met my now husband, Ben Knight. And we eventually started a little catering business in New York called Viv's Kitchen. And we operated this catering business out of our apartment in Harlem. So it was not legit at all, but we were just side hustling. And the little catering business was a little bit of a success. And we had some folks who wanted to invest in an actual storefront. And so we came home and told my parents that. And they made a counter offer and said that they would help us open a restaurant anywhere in North Carolina. And that sounded appealing to us. So we moved back to North Carolina and it became very clear that we could open this restaurant anywhere in this building in downtown Kinston that my parents had already purchased.
That's nice if they had already grabbed it.
Yes. So that the map from where we could open got very small. And so we opened in 2007, I believe, and have opened Chef and the Farmer in 2007. And we have been open for about 13 years now. And about 6 years in, I still couldn't let go of this idea of storytelling. And I was writing a little blog, which when you have a blog and you don't have any followers, you're basically just writing an email.
Yeah, it's a journal.
Yes, it's a journal, exactly. But I became really fascinated with the food traditions around me and the dying food traditions in particular, the things that people used to do and that they no longer do. And I wanted to turn that into a documentary about the farmers and the cooks in Eastern North Carolina. And just by virtue of having a friend who became the director, she decided that I really needed to be in the show, in the documentary, and it became a show about my life and my work here in Eastern North Carolina. So we started A Chef's Life. We shot 5 seasons of A Chef's Life. And over the course of that period of time, I got to write a cookbook. And the cookbook was called Deep Run Roots, and it's about 500 and some pages. So I got to finally do what I wanted to do, I guess, which was be a storyteller.
I should point out, it is a great cookbook and James Beard Award winning. And I'm a Southerner, and there are recipes in there that I forgot I even loved that food. So it's an encyclopedia at our house. What are we going to eat tonight? Is going to go into your cookbook and looking at it. And it's pretty amazing what you're able to do. And the show is amazing in that the kind of honesty, I not a spoiler, or a spoiler alert here, it's aired. So, you know, I haven't seen it, go look at it. When the restaurant burns, I mean, it's gut wrenching. And for you all to show the emotion and the kind of stress on your family and the community and how people rallied around you and the employees, you know, I'm a small business guy, and it's one of those great things. And I regularly encourage people and send them links to it, because understanding what happens and what do you do when it all falls apart, and how do you come out of that as a small business person? So, you know, what are the lessons that you've learned kind of in this time in dealing with kind of reinventing yourself and reinventing both the restaurant and the television show and doing it in the modern way? You know, your family's involved and it's pretty vulnerable. It can't be easy and can't come natural.
I think that growing up where I did and always being aware that I was like a country mouse and there were city mice, and I always felt like an underdog to some degree. And so that, coupled with having worked in restaurants for so long, I think you become very nimble and really aware of your weaknesses and really focused on your strengths. And so, you know, I always feel like I've had to fight a little bit harder for things living in a rural community and, you know, not being in front of people and in front of like business owners and influencers. So I think that we have just always been hyper aware that if we're going to survive, whether it's after a fire or to make a TV show or to open a new restaurant, that we have to work a little bit harder than everybody else. And whether or not that's true, it's definitely kept us on our toes and had us always looking for new opportunities or ways really to make the most out of the opportunities that are in front of us.
Yeah, I think you do an incredible job of showing that through the episodes as people watch and they see, and I'll use this, I know you won't like this word, but you know, your fame kind of grow and the demands on your time outside of the restaurant, outside of the community, and still dealing with 2 little kids at home and a restaurant full of employees and a marriage and adding a second restaurant. The way you deal with that so vulnerably of I'm stressed and overwhelmed here and, you know, I've got to go out on a book tour and the truck breaks down and all that realness, I think is so inspirational in a world where Instagram and all kinds of, you know, ways we can change the pictures the world see of us. I think that's the charm and the amazingness that I find both in how you live your life, but also how you've built that kind of following around you. Was that intentional? Did somebody give you, you know, did you go to class to learn vulnerability, or did you just kind of decide, hey, we're not going to fake it. We're just going to show you that this isn't all Ritz-Carlton and private jet world.
Well, you know, the difference between our show and really everything else in modern media is really we don't stage anything. And when we first started making the show, I never thought anyone was going to see it. And I had never had any, you know, media training. I had never spoken to camera. And the director was a childhood friend of mine. So it felt like, you know, people always say, you're so honest and vulnerable. And how are you that way on camera? And I always explain it that I was never talking to camera or performing for camera. I was talking to this person behind the camera who's my friend. And that was really in the first season. And then when the first season aired, I was like, oh my God, I have got to clean up my act. I've got to wear some makeup. I can't show all these failures on TV. And then what people really responded to was the fact that, you know, I allowed myself to fail on camera and to not look perfect and to show that the restaurant business was not necessarily a glamorous affair. And so luckily, we were not overproduced. And then we found out that that was really our strength, was being honest. And I think it's so rare to see that people have so, like, they responded in an amazing way. And people really, I think, believe in me and what we're doing more than most media personalities, because I am willing to show my fault. And I think, I wonder why no one else has watched it and is doing it. But I don't wonder that when I watch it, because I'm like, oh no.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get that, because we had talked as we recorded this just before we went on. I shared with you that, you know, my new book, which doesn't actually release for a month, but the copy showed up today in our office. And the book's called Uniquely You, but it's about being unique and vulnerable and quit trying to be somebody else's highlight reel. You just come off as a bad fake. In today's world, people want to know the real you. They want to see who you are, warts and all. And I absolutely think that's what makes your show so authentic, that you show your dad complaining about the prices of things, you know, in his own daughter's restaurant, you know, and that you charged for bread. I just, you know, but I think those are the things that people go, wow, this is real. This isn't a Kardashian staged thing. You know, this isn't reality TV. This is just real folks sharing with us what it's like to be in business and do life with each other. And so I encourage anybody who hasn't seen the show, go watch it. It's amazing. Peabody Award winning. It really is. It's a surprise. You forget that it's a show about food and you start thinking it's just a show about people that you wish were your best friends.
Oh, well, thank you.
But let's talk about the restaurant. So as we shared with your team, you know, my daughter is in advertising in New York. And so I hope that someday I can convince her to come home, although not sure the restaurant business is where she'll go. But, you know, when you came home, how did you decide Chef and the Farmer? I mean, where did that come from? And, you know, you could have gone a lot of ways. And I think by your own admission, you began to cook food that people that were your regional customers had never eaten before, didn't have any desire to buy. And where did that belief come from that we can start something and elevate the community in our offerings?
Well, you know, we didn't know what we were doing at first. Originally, the restaurant was going to be just a sandwich shop. And then when we moved to town and started making plans to open, we realized that it had plenty of sandwich shops. And what it really needed, like if we were going to live in the community, we'd love a place to go and have a nice meal and a nice glass of wine and a server that was engaged. And at the time, Dan Barber from Blue Hill in New York was making big waves with highlighting local food and really spelling out the story of the person who grew the ingredient. And we thought, you know, no one's doing this here. And we're coming from such an agricultural region. We should really make this our focus. And then we started looking around and realized that, you know, all these people who used to be tobacco farmers were no longer growing tobacco, and they had these small plots of land because tobacco is a crop that a family can make a living off of with a small acreage, but there are very few of those crops. And so we thought, well, maybe we'll just encourage these folks by, you know, offering to buy anything they grow to grow niche produce or proteins or make cheese. And so we put the word out, and that was what we were planning on doing, but we still didn't have a name. And my brother-in-law was helping us brainstorm, and he came up with the name Chef and the Farmer. And it was so simple, but so clearly articulated what it was we wanted to do, and also articulated why it was that we were back here, because, you know, my dad was going to help us, you know, open this restaurant, and he's a farmer and I'm a chef. So it made a lot of sense. Down the road, 5 years, 6 years after we opened, when the farm to table movement became such a huge thing, I was a little bit embarrassed by the name of the restaurant because it seemed so cliche, but we really named our spot before it became something that everybody talked about, but very few people understood, the farm to table movement.
That's awesome. And I was, as I mentioned, I was recently in not one, but both of your restaurants in the same day, because I'm a geeky fanboy like that. And, you know, they're both amazing and different, and we're both very full on this day. And as I talked with people, there were a lot of tourists who were there, folks who had driven an hour, hour and a half to come for dinner. How much impact has, and again, I'll use that word that I know you don't like, your fame or your notoriety brought? Because I know I was there 15 or so years ago in town, and there wasn't any local brewery there. There wasn't any upscale restaurants to speak of. How much have you all seen outsiders coming in and spending money and rediscovering, you know, rural North Carolina?
Oh, it's been tremendous. You know, we opened in 2007 and, you know, everybody thought it was just like a joke because everything around the restaurant was literally like boarded up or condemned. And, you know, no one would spend time downtown after dark because they felt it was dangerous. And so this was kind of like a joke that we were doing this, but we opened and we were open for about a year and a half and things were going well. People were driving from, you know, Raleigh to eat with us. You know, we didn't have a show or anything at that time. And then Stephen Hill, a gentleman from Kinston who was going to open a brewery outside of town, decided to open a brewery two blocks from the restaurant because he understood that there would be synergy there. And that was really kind of the beginning of, you know, this momentum that our little downtown had. And then when the show started, it was overwhelming how many people were traveling to Kinston to visit the restaurant. So in the course of 5 years, I guess, two additional hotels have opened downtown, a number of shops and other restaurants not related to us have opened. Stephen Hill, who opened the brewery, opened a distillery and has started an arts community. And so there's been a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of outsiders or tourists coming to just like walk around, you know, the four blocks that is our downtown. And it blows my mind. And I worry when I meet people, they're like, yeah, we're spending 3 days here. And I'm wondering, what in the world are you doing?
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the things that we get wrong. People who live in small towns, we look at, and I'm very guilty of this, we look at our liabilities or the lack of, you know, big box stores or shopping malls or that sort of thing. We look at that as a reason that people wouldn't want to come and spend time here. But I really think that those attributes are more of an opportunity than a liability because, you know, people from larger cities come and spend the weekend here and, you know, go to Reynolds Seafood, this family-owned seafood market that's been here for 70 years. And they go to Parrott Brothers Hardware, where it's a family-owned hardware store and it's downtown and they have chicks and rabbits. And so those things are what people are traveling to experience and not the big movie theater or amusement parks, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think you're dead on. So I was going to say, I went to the seafood and then I can't think of the name of it, but it's like, it is the world's largest hog store.
They call it the world's largest pork display, Nahunta.
That's it. Yeah. So I went there because you shot an episode there. And I think I'm hungry for that authenticity that I growing up in the Ozark Mountains, but also in being around people who understand where their food comes from and the quality. And I think people, that's what people want today, is unique and authentic. And I think that's what makes, you know, Chef and the Farmer such a great restaurant, but, you know, what you do so special. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that, you know, you've got a James Beard award-winning cookbook, but it is an incredible cookbook. But what's your favorite kind of recipe or two that's in there, you know, your go-to?
Well, you know, Ron, that is such a hard question.
Because which child do you love the most?
Yeah, well, it really depends on the weather. You know, I love every recipe, every chapter in the book is based on one ingredient or one vegetable or fruit primarily. And so I love the summer chapters. I mean, my favorite summer recipe, I would say, is the pork shoulder steaks braised in watermelon. And I love that, one, because it's easy, and two, because it's so unexpected. And, you know, we don't generally cook watermelon. You expect it to fall apart when you do. And based on the way we cook this, it ends up looking like big chunks of tomato that have stewed. And so I love the red curry braised watermelon and pork for the summer. And then for the fall, I love fall or the spring, I love the turnip root and green gratin, because turnips, you know, more than any other ingredient in the book, I think people turn their nose up to them. There's nothing sexy about a turnip, but I happen to love them, and I love their bitterness, and I think they can be really savory. I love their greens and their roots. And so this gratin takes turnips and their greens and bread and cheese and bakes it all together. And even my children like it. And that's saying a lot.
That is saying a lot. As you look at the future, you know, as we were talking before we went on the air, that I don't think you know it, but you're an economic developer. Probably aren't putting that on your resume, but if we're talking about growing and changing and bettering the lives of the people around us as the definition of economic development, you and Ben have certainly done that. What's the future hold for Chef and the Farmer and for you? You know, the show's kind of come to an end, or has come to an end, but I think I know this, that there's been an announcement of kind of a next idea or next show.
Yeah. So we have been working on a new show for about a year and a half now. I felt like A Chef's Life had run its course, just because, you know, we had done all the ingredients. Every episode is about an ingredient. We had done all the ingredients that made sense. And my life has changed so much from the beginning of the show that it started to not feel as authentic and spontaneous as it once did. So I wanted to evolve the concept to reflect, you know, my interest as a cook and as a community leader and as a Southerner. So we've been working on a new show that's called South by Somewhere, and it will debut on PBS in this winter, and it'll be an hour long, and it will air at the same time across the whole country. And you may not know this, but with general PBS shows, they offer to distribute shows nationwide, but then every programmer decides if they want to air that show and when. And so it makes it really hard to promote the show and to see and understand how many people are watching the show. And so this is a huge step forward for us. So South by Somewhere will start this coming winter. And then the future for our restaurants and for our community, we want to continue to work to make our restaurants places that are good enough, special enough, enjoyable enough that people will travel distances to eat in them, whether or not, you know, I'm famous. And we want to encourage and foster a community. My goal is to live in a community that is vibrant enough and has enough opportunity that my children might consider moving back here. You know, isn't that our goal for life? And so, you know, I don't imagine that Kinston is going to be the next Raleigh, but I think there will always be people who want to live in small towns. And I think small towns become more and more attractive as rural communities get broadband internet, which is a big problem currently. And as we have more things like restaurants you're excited to eat in, or coffee shops for, you know, meeting friends. So, you know, my goal for our town is to help people open businesses in Kinston that make Kinston a really attractive place to live.
I see you are an economic developer. We do the exact same thing. You know, you just feed them food and I work on everything else and we can change the world together.
Well, Ron, you should move to Kinston.
I tried once, as I shared with you. I tried to do that once and couldn't make it happen. My wife grew up in Chapel Hill, so we love that part of the world a lot.
Oh, good.
So you're going to be with us June 20th at Catalyst University in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And I got to tell you, I've done a lot of interviews, but this is like fanboy Ron Day. I am so excited that we got to talk today and then I get to hang out with you and be on stage with you at Catalyst. So Vivian, thanks for being with us and thanks for what you're doing to set an example how small business people can change their community and change the lives of everybody around us. So I hope you enjoyed that as much as me. I love people who want to change the world. And when they do that in their own way and they do the hard blocking and tackling every day, those are the people who become my heroes. And Vivian Howard is one of those. So if you'd like to meet Vivian, please join us June 20th, Catalyst University, Kalamazoo, Michigan. And along with some of the great men and women in this country that are changing the world, come join us. We'd love to have you there. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us. We hope today's conversation inspired you to keep moving forward on your leadership journey. To connect with Ron, you can tweet him at Ron Kitchens or send him a message via ronkitchens.com. If you are listening via iTunes, please leave a review. It really helps us connect to you, grow our impact, and keep moving always forward.